Hello and welcome to Reanimated, episode 256. This is Stuart, co-host A from California. Co-host A plus is AJ Conrad in New York.
Bonjour.
We are together, Wonder Twin Powers Activate Reanimated, the podcast about all things zombie. We are going to be sewing up the last couple episodes of The Deadlands, the New Zealand zombie demonic underworld show from Shudder and New Zealand TV this episode. And then next time we're going to move on to something else fun, which we haven't even discussed yet, but we will, and we'll figure it out. My vote, personally, HA, is Yummy. It's also on Shudder. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, but also, I mean, we have this news coming up, so we'll have to add this one to the roster too. But, you know, jumping into our very slim news items, the sequel to Train to Busan, Peninsula. Well,
let's hash it out. Yeah. So let's talk about the Peninsula, or Peninsula, no article.
Yeah. Like, so basically, they kind of are just like, okay, well, we're going to keep our original release schedule. And they are doing that, I guess, after a lot of teasing. And this article goes into quite a bit about what the director is saying. And anyway, I am a slightly reserved in sort of my, what I'm thinking in terms of my expectations for this, because part of why Train to Busan, I think, was so good was because it was a little bit of a sleeper hit and you didn't know quite as much about it. And I feel like they've shown us a lot about this, at least in the trailers and now in this article. So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, it looks pretty action-packed, and I mean, a lot of the stuff that I loved about Train to Busan seems to be present here, so we'll see what happens.
This article also is kind of spoilery in terms of plot, so
yeah. So read it with care.
Not sure why they went into so much detail about the plot.
It was like a lot.
In the second paragraph, I'm like, wait, I don't want to know all this.
That's why I'm trying to be slightly circumspect in my commentary, because I don't want to ruin it for anybody else. And I actually, when I went into this article, I was like, oh, wow, okay. Oh, so they're really getting into it. But anyway, but I'm still really excited to see it, and We'll definitely be reviewing this at some point.
So do you get a sense from, I kind of stopped reading the article because of those spoilery issues, but, you know, I did see, like, okay, they're kept keeping to their release date, but it does say in theaters. It doesn't say streaming, at least not that I can see.
So it's unclear to me. I don't think it's going to be in theaters in the U.S. I think it's going to be in theaters elsewhere, because right now, as far as I know, most U.S. theater chains are not open, at least they're not in New York, and that maybe they are in certain cities, but not here. So I think they're probably going to do, I think they're saying this for now, but I would imagine it's going to go streaming pretty quickly. Because I don't know that you would have much choice. I don't think you can recoup your money.
It's kind of interesting to look at what movies have just been like, ah, F it, we're going to release on streaming, like Greyhound. Tom Hanks picture. It was probably a massive budget. I haven't even looked it up, but it's on Apple Plus.
Yep.
Meanwhile, like, Black Widow movie is just hanging out. I mean, Marvel can, or Disney can hold on to it for as long as they want, I guess, and they'll be fine.
Well, I mean, they're making all the money on Hamilton right now. Did you see that? It was freaking bananas.
Have they gotten a whole bunch of new subs?
Just insane number of downloads just within, like, and still continuing, still ticking up. So, you know, maybe it wasn't necessary for Disney to open up the park so early, is all I'm saying.
Well, let's save that for just a moment. Or not, I guess. So either we find Peninsula streaming and we do that next week, or we can talk about Yummy. And also we have Reality Z, which is on Netflix, which is the Brazilian version of the Dead Set. Anyway, we'll hash it out, guys. We got plenty to talk about.
Yep.
But as you just dropped that news bomb, Disney World reported yesterday that they were opening up despite Florida now hitting New York level numbers. Joining the esteemed ranks, joining those ranks this week were California and Texas and Florida, the triumvirate leading the charge now on COVID new confirmed cases. You must in New York, you must be just like, dude.
I have some really strong feelings about it, because I get, like, part of me understands that if you weren't in the epicenter and didn't see what was happening here, maybe you're going to have some skepticism. Maybe it feels a little less realistic to you. I was talking with, I had like a mini high school reunion yesterday with a bunch of my friends. And for those of you who don't know, I grew up in a very, very small town. So my graduating class was 26 people. This was like 8 of them. And in various parts of the country and the world. And, you know, it's kind of interesting just the sort of observations from people in different parts. And I basically, everywhere other than New York, people are just not wearing masks and are fighting it. And, you know, like, I have a friend that, like, her children went to stay with her parents just to get them away, you know, and they're out in Denver, I guess, and her parents are still in Vermont. And her husband had actually driven them cross country because it was kind of like they were just too worried about the flights at that point. And but then things had kind of opened up, so she decided to take the flight to go and pick them up, and basically described, like, everybody was wearing masks until the point where the beverage service and stuff happened, and then everybody took it off, except for her. Everybody took off their masks and stuff to eat and drink and whatever, and she's kind of like, well, that doesn't seem to make a ton of sense. And then our friend who was in London and had to travel to Portugal basically said nobody was observing any kind of anything. So, I mean, I find it baffling just given how much we know now. I mean, we knew a lot less about this when New York started to hit and be the epicenter. And now we know so much more, and we know that masks can actually very much help limit the exposure and the transmission of this. And I, you know, I get that they're uncomfortable and they're not fun, but I just don't understand it. And I mean, we're seeing some of this in New York. I can't say that everybody in New York is being good, because they're not. Like, there was definitely in Long Island City pool parties similar to what we were seeing in the Ozarks a few weeks ago. And I mean, and the news that just really just baffles me is that now they're thinking, I don't know if you saw this, Stuart, but there was basically, they're seeing enough, like, people who had antibodies before, it's disappearing, and they still just don't know whether they kind of feel like once it sort of cycles out of your system, you really don't have protection anymore. So you can get this again. And every single health professional and frontline worker, healthcare worker I know who has seen this, like, in the New York emergency rooms and hospitals, basically are like, they're like, you need to wear your mask because this stuff is just bad and bananas. And yeah, some people don't get it to the extent that other people do, but the other study that came out this week was just what it is doing to those people who are affected, and even people they think have mild symptoms. It's just not a fun thing to have. And hopefully the people who have mild symptoms are not going to be affected long term, but the people who have gotten it pretty drastically, it's just not a good thing. And I understand saying this to you, Stuart, is probably stress inducing given the fact that, you know, what's going on in your county right now, but and in your, you know, in your life. But I just think, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I don't know how, like, at least here in New York, and we talked a little bit about the school thing, and we saw some of what Trump was saying about, like, basically threatening not to give government aid to schools that are going to do remote learning. There is definitely a lot of, I mean, and you see Dr. Fauci out there kind of going renegade, going maverick, basically, and saying that he disagrees with the recommendations in terms of what the administration is saying. Like, I don't know where we are going to be in the next few months. And it's kind of scary. I hope that we're all, like, I hope they find a vaccine really quickly. And I hope that maybe there is actually protection if you have gotten it. But it's feeling weird. And to see all these places that I feel could have learned from what happened in New York, like, Texas is now turning people away from emergency rooms. It's crazy. So, I don't know. I hope you and your family stay safe. I hope everybody stays safe out there. I just wear a mask. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I don't leave my house very often. We're hunkering down. We have been for this past week as my whole family goes for a COVID test on Monday, another drive-through. But everybody, whenever I'm out and about, I'm seeing a lot of good mask wearing, except for people maybe walking, because we're in a small town and you can really get more than 6 feet away. But yeah, masks generally are well received here, just not on Facebook.
Yeah, apparently not.
Other than that, country-wise, it's USA at the top, Brazil with USA has 3.2-ish million confirmed cases, Brazil 1.8, and then India is a million lower than that with 849,000, and then Russia and Peru. The top five has just kept changing as this has gone along. It's kind of been interesting.
Well, do you think some of that is, though, because of availability of testing, too? Because I feel like some of these countries, I don't know that the numbers are as accurate. I think it's because they just don't have the testing.
Yeah, but it's then you look at the death rates, and that'll... it's actually not that dissimilar. Well, it is different, actually. USA, number one, 134,000 deaths. 135, if you round up. Brazil, 71,000. UK... 45,000 in Italy, 35,000.
Yeah,
and that's being attributed to COVID. Of course, when we look back at this and look at the statistics and look at national average death rates compared with 2020, and I'm sure we'll have a whole different top five.
Oh yeah. Also very interesting, despite the fact that the UK was, nothing can compare to what the US is dealing with, but UK is obviously a lot smaller. Basically they were also one of the really high, they were one of the places that was hit pretty hard. And apparently nobody is wearing masks there. And that is both in the news, but also my friend who's over there in London, basically he and his fiance are some of the only people out there wearing masks on the street. And they get heckled for it. So that's interesting. I find interesting in general. Then the other piece of news that I saw that was, I thought, because everybody was kind of, especially those countries like Brazil and whatever, were pointing to Sweden as a country that was like not doing the same thing that other places were. And their death rate is so much higher than all the other countries that decided to sort of like lock everybody down. And if you look at the population, it's like a pretty dire, it's just horrible. Like the percentage of people. Compared to say Denmark, where they did put pretty strict lockdowns in place. So anyway, I guess we'll have to see how this goes. I hope that we get a vaccine soon. That's all I can say. actually we saw Trump wearing a mask for the first time this week, so maybe that will help a little bit.
We'll see. Anyway, should we move into zombie stuff? Oh, I guess we've already talked Peninsula.
Well, we've talked Peninsula, but yeah, I say we get going on the rest of the stuff, and just say stay safe and be well, everybody. I hope you are. This is just kind of nuts. Also, the lamest zombie apocalypse ever. Let's just put it that way.
Super lame.
Go ahead.
Angela Kang went on to what is now somehow the vehicle for Walking Dead news, which is an Instagram show starring Jeffrey Dean Morgan and his wife, whose name I don't remember. What is going on in the world where that is a sentence? Like, showrunner for Walking Dead goes and hangs out with Jeffrey Dean Morgan and his wife on Instagram, and it happens every week. So the fact that she was on the show suggests that, and she's hyping up elements of the finale, but not releasing a date. Morgan apparently said soon. It suggests that it is coming up. I don't understand what the delay is, unless they're just working on sequencing in, obviously releasing an entirely new spinoff and Fear the Walking Dead season 6. And who knows what the state of production is in Georgia. These kind of like unknowns.
I think it's probably that stuff, but I think also probably they had to tweak some things that they weren't anticipating. We know that part of the delay was just the post-production work, and some of that stuff may have had to be changed a little bit, is my guess. But I do think that this is promising, and I don't think they would be teasing it if it wasn't going to be hopefully imminent, but who knows? I mean, people are bored, so they're probably willing to eat up anything that they like, any bone that they throw. I think we're gonna be like, yay. So I don't know.
What do you think people like Paul Tassi and Eric Kane from Forbes are even doing with their lives right now? Like,
oh, I don't know, man. I think they're gonna cry. They've gone
months without writing about Walking Dead. I mean,
they're probably crying.
Probably should do a well check on them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the end of news. Angela Kang went on Hanging with the Morgans and talked about the finale. And, you know, she was mostly talking about plot, not so much behind the scenes. So we can just keep holding our breath and waiting for that to be released. And then in the meantime, we can finish up talking about the Deadlands, episodes 7 and 8, which were named Broken Promises and Sacrifice of Innocence. So clearly we went out on a upbeat note.
Yeah. Well, before I get into my feelings as a whole, we should talk about these episodes. I felt like the pacing of both these episodes were a little bit weird. And I feel like one of the things that did bother me about them is that the storytelling and sort of the Mayhei and Waka, their relationship, their friendship together, I don't feel like it could be weakened by some of the stuff that they present here. So it bothered me a lot just because of how much buildup we had with their friendship and their trust in each other.
We keep having this yo-yoing of their relationship, which I was already griping about the last time we talked about episodes 5 and 6.
And it only gets worse here. And
it's really kind of it doesn't make a lot of sense in Broken Promises, because Waka gets this mission, which I refer to in my head as save the interns.
Yeah, pretty much.
runs. He's like, all right, I'm going. And then Mayhei's like, I want to come, or I should be. And he's like, no. And why is he suddenly like this? Yeah. There's not a lot of I don't understand it.
I also don't understand it from the perspective of we all know that he understands that she is special. We all know that regardless of what anybody says, he understands that she is special. And, you know, no matter how much sort of mea culpa crap his dad does, his dad is still somebody that I feel has not shown that he can be trusted. In fact, he does. He just feels shady regardless.
Precisely. And why would Waka feel good about leaving Mayhei there
with
his dad?
And that's the point. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. I don't think that he would do that. I don't believe that about his character. I think he, no matter what his faults are, he thinks that he can protect her in a way that nobody else can. And so I just don't buy that he would have left her there. So that part of the storytelling really bothered me a lot. The parts that I did kind of like is, you know, he goes off. This is very much like, this very much felt like Xena/Hercules in terms of like going through a quest, having sort of a dorky sidekick that's, you know, not useful for the most part.
Hako comes in handy in the next
episode. I did like, you know, the fight scenes in this and the choreography. That's some of the strengths of this show is like these kinds of Waka as a whole is like this kind of cool warrior character, and you get to see him really put through his paces in this.
He really finds his sweet spot of how to cut off people's heads in one or two hits in this episode.
Yep, he does. and you know, and so I like that. I think that some of the I don't know. There are certain things in sort of, I would imagine, with the Maori traditions. I mean, we've seen this throughout this whole series, is that there is definitely blood sacrifice. There's definitely a weight and a gravity put on bloodlines, and in terms of what specific sacrifices can do and the power it can give you. But there's also like, and this is very much like just a mythological, this is like a trend you see in so many different mythologies, where you've got gods or you've got humans just having an enormous amount of hubris, and usually it's humans, but wanting to steal sort of different powers. Here there's just a lot of discussion about the sort of the other world, the distrust. Like, this is what I find a little bit confusing, and I think it's hit home so much more here, is that there is just distrust of the dead, distrust of the spirits, distrust of the gods. And you see this in both these episodes in a way that I found to be confusing, in the way that both Waka and Meihei react to different things that happen.
It is, they do go back and forth, because Meihei is eventually offered a chance to speak with the dead, and she kind of leaps at it, and yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense given that she's been one of the voices saying don't trust the dead,
right,
over and over again through the whole series, and then she's given a chance to, and she's like, yeah man, that sounds great. So doesn't 100% make sense. These three battles that Waka goes through are fantastic, as yes. You were saying. The one in the water is just super
so good.
Beautiful. It's one thing that I did notice, actually, and I noticed in the last couple episodes we talked about too, is they're putting a lot of faith and really working out his facial prosthetic.
Yep.
And it doesn't always work.
It does not. Maybe
because I'm looking for it.
Yeah, it moves a bit. It moves a bit.
Well, it's not even that it moves, but you can see the outline of it, especially like in the scene where his head's being held underwater. Like, you're looking, the whole screen is his face and that prosthetic, and you can just see the outline of it around his face, because it's going to look different underwater.
Right.
So I think they really tried to work that thing out more than it could handle. I mean, it's a really good piece of makeup, but they love to put the camera on Waka's face in a close-up in this show, and I just don't think you can't get away with that every time. So no. I think they put a little bit too much faith in that. And it's such a huge part of his character that, of course, they're going to. But it also is just like, all right, yeah, I can. There it is. There's that thing around his. It's under his eyes. And, you know.
Well, the interesting thing about that prosthetic, I don't know if you saw the interview with the actor. But basically, it was such a nightmare to have to put it on. Like, it took at least, I think, 4 hours to get that thing on and right. That he ended up wearing it a lot during the shooting so that he wouldn't, like, during the filming of all of this. So that he wouldn't have to go through that every day. But
he just went home with it on?
Yeah. And he was like so afraid of like scaring his son. Like, so he would put like, cause you know, the scarring parts that has like mm-hmm. makeup in it too. So he would like cover up that stuff. So my guess is that this is a pretty difficult prosthetic to deal with. And maybe some days were better than others in terms of keeping it on his face. Maybe those were the days that he had been wearing it for a long amount of time. I have to say, that sounds like the most uncomfortable thing ever, to have to wear that thing on a daily basis. But basically,
and then getting it peeled off with the glue, I'm sure it would leave like... Remember, the dude who played Gimli had real problems with his prosthetics.
Yep.
Speaking of New Zealand productions, when he was, you know, getting into dwarf makeup to the point where I think he had to like take some days off.
Yep.
It was just really messing with him. So yep. I'm sure those things are difficult. I'm just saying, like,
no, but I hear you. I noticed it too.
Take it easy on, don't try to make the makeup do all the work. I think you have to have a little more, I don't know what, like how you would do that. Maybe edit it a little more in post or something, but It just every so often it would call out to me and be like, hey.
Yeah, it takes you out of it. I agree.
I'm a like, piece of rubber on a man's face.
Yep.
but yeah, you know, not to take away from the fact that, as you've already said, choreography in that fight scene in the
so
surf
good.
Is fantastic. It's just such a beautiful scene. And then again with in all of these fights, like he goes up against this really strong warrior in the surf, then like the fast demon lady who gets the better of him and eats some of him. Gross.
Yep.
In the jungle. And then the massive dude with all the other zombies tied up in the forest with them. And I just like each of these fights are just like so cinematic and beautiful. And it was a lot of fun to watch. And then Meihei's journey back at the house with his dad is just, well, I guess you're just kind of disappointed in her.
Yeah.
You're feeling like all like, yeah, Waka's so badass. And then meanwhile, Meihei, who has been making fun of him for being dumb, or not making fun of him, but she kind of did. And when he was leaving, he's like, I don't need you. I never did. She's like, well, you know, you're a great fighter, but
you're kind of
she
dumb.
Stops herself from saying you're dumb. But it was pretty funny. Meanwhile, she's just falling right for to Kaipo's BS, and we all know it.
And, you know, we all know it, but again, this is the part that I'm just so troubled by, because I feel like she would have known it too. And I also feel like we have seen, and this is why it bothers me so much, is that we have seen her basically trust her own instincts, even though traditionally everybody else is railing against her. So we see her challenge basically her traditional role, as her father had initially basically said, oh, you're really smart, but you're kind of a pain, and your curiosity is going to get the best of you. And her brother basically saying she doesn't have a place and she shouldn't go after her dad. And then basically, you know, her mom saying that we just need to, like, basically stop going after the children. And, you know, so we've seen, like, multiple really, like, big examples of her challenging what is tradition. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it really, like, questionable that she would do it here, and especially doing it with a group of people that are not really her family. She has also seen the damage that basically listening to the dead and dealing with black magic can do. Clearly it's what broke the world. So why would you trust the person who broke the world? Because that is the real question.
Because he keeps saying it kind of sincerely that he's not trying, he's trying to fix it.
Well, right. But we all know, based upon his behavior and even based upon what Waka has shared with her, that just from a sort of, like, character flaw, this guy is just not somebody to be trusted. And I don't buy that she would trust him. So this is the one big issue I have with the series and sort of how they wrapped it up. Because I don't buy that she would do this. And I know that part of why they were, you know, again, they're trying to do that yo-yo thing to bring back her and Waka together in a place where they trust each other. But it really, to me, just didn't wash. And I wish they had made a different decision here. And I think you could have done it with her coming to this realization a lot more quickly. What I was really hoping that they were doing here was that it was basically a bait and switch on her part, that she was pretending to trust him and not actually trusting him, but that's not what happened.
She jumps right into the eyeball slash whatever that hole in the ground looks like to you.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode.
Wait, what are you implying? What else could it look like?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on holes
Anyway, that definitely didn't sit well with me. No. And it disappointed me, because I just felt like she is such an amazing character that I feel like they really wasted something here in how they treated her at the end.
Yeah.
So, but Waka goes on his quest. He comes back with two out of the three chosen people.
That's in the next episode, right? Because at the end of this one, he's successfully managed to trap the spirit of inside the giant in the circle by finishing. And he goes through the hilarious, like, Evil Dead type thing where he forgets the words of the spell. Yep. He doesn't do it as badly as Ash did, but it's still, I enjoyed
there.
That.
It's definitely a reference. Definitely,
it feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But he does successfully capture the spirit, and that's, I think, when the episode ends. He takes the woman who's like, well, by the way, how did you think this was going to go? We're all going to be sacrificed. And then he's going to meet up with Hako and the other two that he's already saved. When the episode ends, because we flash back to Mehe jumping into the hole in the ground.
Yeah.
Next episode begins with her in the afterlife, I think, or that at least is one of the early scenes where she talks to her dad again.
Yep.
Except this was also a flashback, right? Because she talks to her dad and Ka is there and he's telling her, go find Waka. And then we see her talking to Rangi. That's how she got her mission to begin with. And so I'm not sure exactly what she saw in the afterlife, unless it was that, which was really just like a flashback from weeks ago. I don't know. It was weird.
And this was the big, you know, big reveal that basically Ka's been double dealing, and that certainly some of what he's been telling Waka is true, but he is not being forthright in terms of, like, you know, this is the point where you're like, oh, things are very different from what probably Waka and other people think they are. And then we get this sort of weird intro about Mehe's family and, you know, how they're kind of wrong, how they're kind of evil, and there's like this whole like other subplot that suddenly jumps in here. And I don't feel like they did this very elegantly. I don't know. It felt a little bit like ham-fisted the way they kind of throw this in here.
I feel like they could have done more with this in earlier. Her father's death scene.
Yeah.
If he'd been able to get a few more lines of dialogue out, they definitely could have planted this seed.
Right.
And then keep like putting that in the flashbacks at the beginning of the episode, you know?
Right.
It feels shoehorned in here because I think this is the first time he talks about it.
Yep. And then they, you know, they definitely tie it into the thing that her uncle had said where she had been dedicated to the gods. And like, so all this stuff kind of gets revealed, but it's only revealed in like these last, like it's to me, as I said, it just felt like it was, if they had planted this earlier, I think you're right, that would have been a better way to go. And I feel like they felt like they planted some clues about this, but I don't think they did it in a really good way. They like really rely a lot on flashbacks here to tell this story, which I think is also a little lazy. But this is, you know, where basically it's like the big reveal about what actually is going on. And it's not a real fun reveal, honestly, because it feels kind of horrible. And I mean, you like the things that happen in this, you definitely are like, oh, well, no kidding. Waka's dad is evil. And he's trying to do a power grab, and oh wait, Ka is pretty much evil, and he's just trying to like bring the world of the dead into the world of the living.
And Waka's mother is still pretty much exactly how she was. She's kind of a curmudgeon,
yeah,
like just an old dead lady who's pretty angry about everything.
Yeah,
so no surprises there. Waka and Mehe are at odds throughout this entire episode until the very end, which is a bummer. He's constantly like trying to get her to stop cooperating with his dad because she has decided, since he didn't bring all three of the interns back, that she was going to be intern number 3/sacrifice. It is interesting when he talks to his mom in the afterlife. I think it's in this episode, maybe the one before, where he's like, she believes in honor and I don't think it exists, but I want to believe in it, that kind of thing, which was a nice sort of culmination of his character growth.
Yeah.
Because also in this episode, she's talking to him about, you taught me so much and I haven't taught you anything. And yet in his like in his head, he's talking about the things that he's learned from her, which I thought that's a real nice sort of message to go out on with their relationship,
even though
that happens pretty early in this episode.
It does. And, you know, it's also, she is his family, at least his chosen family. And this guy has never had loyalty to anybody. And so he's willing to just put himself totally in danger and does do that. And as I said, the thing that I found disappointing was that she's so willing to be this sacrifice and unwilling to listen to him. And again, I feel like she would have listened to him. I don't think she would have, even despite the revelation that he is technically one of the dead, I don't believe that she would have trusted his father in the way that they show.
In her defense, he is coming at this from a place of just like that we've seen him in before, which is like unreasoning anger. And he doesn't really take the time to go into a lot of information. Like, and he's just like, shit eaters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. And I do think that, you know, in terms of we can also, in her defense, she's being given information that she can somehow fix what happened. And I think that you really want to believe that. And so in terms of her sacrificing herself for the greater good, she's basically like, I don't want to do this, but if it saves the world, it's worth doing it. And
the other two interns are on board with this idea too. They're like, if it's for the greater good, we're gonna sacrifice ourselves. And so it does feel like, well, they don't seem like bad people. So maybe there is something to this.
Yeah.
Turns out they were just pawns also.
Yep.
And yeah.
And there is a moment, because you do feel like some of the people in the tribe that are helping Kaipo do his stuff are also pretty wise. And so there's a moment of hesitation when they realize things are not going.
His wife, yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, he says something like, do you trust me? And it's like, no, man, I don't trust you at this point. And basically, like, the sort of dark ending of this is that, you know, everybody gets overrun. And
but not everybody.
Not everybody.
Well, do you feel like Takaipo knew he was going to get in, what's the word? Exorcismed? No, the other opposite of that.
No, I think he thought he had a deal and that he would be all powerful. Like,
So it's still him in there, not just that he's been completely subordinated by the...
Oh, no, I think he's been subordinated. I think he thought he wouldn't be subordinated, though.
Because it does feel like he's in a lot of pain and it doesn't seem like it's going the way he wants. But then Wiro or whoever it is inside him definitely takes over.
Yeah. So I think that he had an impression that he could somehow control all this, and that's not what happened. So and
in the very end, there's still at least one guy who's like cool with him, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there somebody like helping him hold the interns down?
Yep.
Even at the very end, and you're just like, wait, dude, what's your problem? Everybody else has run away. All of these warriors who kept, you know, trying to fight Waka every time he would show up. What happened to these guys? Either way, so the whole village gets overrun. The Takaipo, the zombie demon of Takaipo, gets up and is like, this is my land now, or this is our land. And I thought they meant like New Zealand or the world, but... And then towards the very end of the episode, you kind of get this idea that it's really just a bubble around the village.
Yep.
Because of the color. It's black and white inside. And there's a lot of zombies. There's some pretty cool scenes when Mehe and Waka are escaping the village. When they get up on that platform, that's pretty cool. There's just, I don't know if that was all actual actors or if some of that was CGI. It looked real. It looked like they just suddenly had 200 extras running towards them and in makeup and with weapons, and I thought that was badass.
Yeah, I thought that the final battle scene was really good. I thought that the choreography of them getting overrun was very good. And it's just sad too, because ultimately Mehe gets pulled down and Waka runs, but he doesn't really have much of a choice. And it's just...
Doesn't he?
So he does have a choice, but like, I think he just sees, like, I don't know.
It feels weird to me.
It does feel weird that he wouldn't at this last moment try to help her. But maybe it's just that his instincts at the last moment just take over. And it's just really sad. I feel like they definitely left this open for a sequel.
Yeah, but it's just super hopeless, which is they don't tie it up, and maybe that's good. Maybe they are looking to do a sequel. I don't see why they wouldn't. But it does. Yeah, this is definitely an Empire Strikes Back type ending.
Yep.
Except that there's a little bit of extra hope, because somehow, against all odds, Mehe's like escaped the army or death.
But has she? Because I feel like the camera work that they show is sort of the camera work that they showed when people were possessed.
Yeah, so why she's sneaking? I don't know.
It's weird. So we'll maybe we'll see a sequel to this. As of today, I didn't see that it had gotten picked up yet. Though I know that this was all received pretty well, and there was a lot of people demanding that they'd make a sequel. And again, this was everybody involved with this whole production is of Maori descent, if not, and that was. Basically, throughout the entire production, this is a really big deal, and to have this go not just to sort of like locally in New Zealand, but to have this go worldwide is a pretty big deal. And it's getting some good reviews, and I do think it deserves those reviews. Despite some of the ending and whatever, I would certainly like to see a sequel, if only because I kind of want it to be less hopeless. So, right. And I really
Waka
love
and Mehe deserve to come out as winners because of all the work that they've done in the writing of this show to make us root for them. It seems like it definitely feels like a disservice for them to be getting their asses kicked at the end. Like the fact that Takaipo is still just there and has not been killed When I looked down at one point, I was like, 20 minutes left. Wow, they've really got to get back there and kill Takaipo. Doesn't even, like, nope. Not even close. They're nope. Just, they're running. So I thought that was sad. But, yeah, if the idea is, okay, next season, it just feels a little weird to introduce the big bad and then leave him there. It's kind of like, you know, the problem that I had with The Walking Dead and Negan being an unresolved big bad loose end for like three seasons in a row. So yeah. I just hope that they can sew it up.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that some of the things that are standing, I mean, Shudder isn't quite the viewing platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's its own thing. But this did get a lot of really great reviews. I saw it like in a lot of different places. I think that, you know, luckily New Zealand has handled their COVID pandemic protocols well, so maybe they can actually start productions there, but I think they're being extraordinarily careful, so maybe that's delaying some things. And also I think people want to kind of play out and see what is going to happen with COVID worldwide. But I do hope that they come around, and I do hope they renew this, because I mean, look, I enjoyed this more thoroughly than a lot of series that I've seen, and the sort of like extra twist to have this be a Maori story that's even though it is definitely fictionalized and they kind of did a new thing with it, I loved seeing it, and I thought that these actors were amazing, and I overall liked it as a whole. So
agreed.
I hope that they do bring it back, and maybe we're just seeing a delay because of all the other stuff going on.
God, yeah.
I know. But in some ways I feel like this would be an opportunity to do something like this, given the dearth of productions right now. I mean, if you could do something in New Zealand, it feels like it might be a smart thing to do. but we'll see. I just double checked, and like the last update, this was as of maybe we're gonna, you know, maybe we'll see something a little bit later. But that was like early June where they still didn't know. We'll have to take it from there, but we'll keep you posted for sure. If they do this, I would enjoy watching it and reviewing it again. So we'll keep everybody posted on that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So now we have a decision to make. We can look for Peninsula.
I say that we review Yummy and give Peninsula a minute, because I feel like they might be making a decision about where and when to do the streaming piece of it. So fair enough. why don't we review Yummy for next time?
Yummy. So Yummy, I think, was set in... No, I don't remember. I think it's a Belgian film.
Yep,
I'm not even
is.
Sure. But it's set in, like, Eastern Europe. Either way, it's going to be a lot of fun. It looks like a lot of fun. I haven't seen it. So get back with us next time on Reanimated. Episode 257 will be that one. And that'll be for Yummy. And if you have thoughts, parting thoughts about the Deadlands, give us a holler. You can email us at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at reanimatedpcast. And our show notes, as always, are on reanimatedpodcast.com.
And until next time, thanks for listening, and ciao. Be well, everybody.
Thank you, and goodbye.